This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. We need a moment to draw your attention to another public health crisis, one we discussed briefly a moment ago with poet Samaj Brown. Tens of thousands of Flint residents were exposed to lead in their drinking water during the Flint water crisis. The most vulnerable to the effects of the crisis were the city's children. Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha was one of the first people to raise alarm bells about elevated blood lead levels in Flint's kids. She's been following their health and development ever since. Now, early results from neuropsychological assessments give us a more in-depth picture of the challenges some Flint kids are facing. Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha shared those results with CBS's 60 Minutes last night, and she joins us by Skype now. Dr. Mona, welcome back to Stateside.
April, it's always great to be with you.
More than 170 kids in Flint were given these in-depth neuropsychological assessments, looking at behavior and developmental issues. How long have you been following these kids?
So this is part of our broad work to really try to answer the question of how are Flint kids doing? I think that's the most common question I get asked wherever I go is like, how's it going? How are the kids doing? How are the people of Flint doing? So real quickly after the water crisis happened, we set up the Flint Registry to do this objective data-driven work to survey not only children, but adults to see how they're doing. And most importantly, to get them connected to the resources to mitigate the impact of what happened in Flint. We've been able to refer about 6,000 people to critical services like neurodevelopmental assessments, like early education, like Medicaid and healthcare services. Our biggest referral for children has been to the Neurodevelopmental Center of Excellence. This is a new center that is led by Genesee Health System. And the numbers that were shared at 60 Minutes came from that center. We referred over probably 1,200 kids just from the registry to the Neurodevelopmental Center. And they are beginning to look at their numbers and the outcomes of those in-depth, like 8-hour assessments. And from the very, you know, from about the first 200 assessments that have been done, those results are quite sobering.
So of the children tested, how many are showing cognitive or developmental delays?
So about 174 children have been tested. And of those tested, about 80% of those kids show a need for additional services for language learning and intellectual concerns. There's a big caveat here. These first kids that went through this neurodevelopmental center, these kids were probably some of the highest risk kids who had some of the highest needs. So these numbers should not be seen as representative of the entire population. However, the more kids that enroll in the registry, the more kids that go through this Neurodevelopmental Center of Excellence, the better we'll be able to tell you how the population is doing.
What's the range of conditions that we're talking about here?
So the range is what you would expect from children exposed to this kind of crisis. You know, this crisis was a population level trauma. So we're seeing the effects of trauma. We're seeing the effects of potential lead exposure, but we're also seeing probably longstanding issues. You know, the Flint crisis happened on top of a community rattled with so many toxicities, you know, be it poverty, be it, you know, poor home environments and crumbling schools and violence and lack of nutrition. All of these things, science tells us, also impacts the development of children. So it's impossible for us to really prove causation to say, oh, these findings are because of the water crisis. Our goal from the very beginning was to see how kids are doing now and to get them into the services they need to make sure that they can thrive and recover. So the things that we are seeing are things like, learning issues, intellectual issues, speech problems, the need for, occupational services and speech services and behavioral health services, treatment recommendations for things like attention disorder. So kind of a wide range of neurodevelopmental issues.
Can I ask how intervention might work for these children if a full intervention for all the kids that we're talking about can happen?
So that has been our work from the very beginning. So when you have something like lead exposure, what you're supposed to do is practice something called primary prevention, which in the world of public health is never exposing the population to something like lead because we know it has this profound neurotoxicity. However, there's a lot that we can do that can mitigate, buffer, limit the impact of this crisis and promote the health and development of children. And that's what we've been doing in Flint from the very beginning. So things that we have been able to put in place that can, you know, help are things like high quality early childcare, massive expansion of early literacy. This is one of my favorite things in Flint. You know, we don't have enough children's books and we have significant problems with literacy. So as a community, we came together, created something called Flint Kids Read. Every kid in Flint now gets a book mailed to their house every month from the age of 0 to 5. I think 150,000 books have been mailed to Flint kids. We've expanded healthcare access, so kids have more access to things like developmental screening and visits with their medical home, nutrition services like our nutrition prescription program, expansion of WIC. So there's a lot that can be done, interventions that can be done to limit the consequences. And even when these consequences are identified, to get kids very as early as possible into the necessary services like speech therapy and healthcare services and special education services to limit the impact of what we may see.
Is a clinical intervention necessary for all of the cases that you looked at?
No, absolutely not. So, you know, some kids would benefit from, for example, therapy services and maybe medication. But a lot of these kids that are being assessed through the Neurodevelopmental Center also need services at the school setting. So all of these recommendations are shared with the child's school. And it's often the school-based interventions that are the most important as well.
Flint schools have, over the past 5 years, seen a significant increase in the percentage of children in the district who need special education services. Those can be really expensive. What does a district that's already strapped financially do when so many kids need this kind of help?
Yeah, this really kind of highlights the crisis in our schools, the crisis of how we fund our schools as a state and really as a nation. Flint schools have lost significant numbers of students, and the funding goes with the students. And at the same time, there's this increased need for special education services. They may have also increased because we're actively, through this registry and the Neurodevelopmental Center, we're actively doing a better job finding kids who need help. So this definitely speaks for the need for increased support from not only the state level, but also the federal level to make sure that our children are being identified and getting into the services they need to recover.
Can I ask you for just a moment about current conditions in Flint?
Absolutely.
The kids that you studied alongside millions of other Michigan school children are at home for the foreseeable future. What are your thoughts about their situation right now?
Yeah, this obviously is an unprecedented crisis we're in right now. I'm at home right now with my two school-age children, and they're obviously not in class. They're not learning, and no matter how much we try to provide them with online or other enrichment activities, there is no replacement for being in school. So we're going to probably see a gap, an achievement gap. Time will tell, but it's going to impact our most underserved children the most. Our underserved kids, like kids in Flint, don't have the privilege of things like, you know, Wi-Fi and, you know, online classrooms and devices at home where they can get these additional enrichment services. So, you know, we will continue to advocate for them that during this period they have some of those educational opportunities, but it is very challenging right now.
What else do you feel like you wish you knew about these kids?
There's a lot that we're beginning to learn. And I think what I wish I could get right now is a better representative of how the entire population is doing. Like I said earlier, these are some of the very first children that have gone through these in-depth assessments. This is not representative of how all our Flint kids are doing. The kids I interact with in Flint every day are incredibly brilliant and brave and resilient, and they're absolute leaders. In my pediatric public health initiative, we have something called the Flint Youth Justice League. They're a group of kids who have been advising us and have been directing us and telling us what we should be doing, and they're actually even working with kids in Newark, New Jersey, that are going through a very similar water crisis and giving them advice on how to be, you know, advocates and leaders and how to use their voice. Yeah, you know, we have ongoing issues in Flint. You know, that national media spotlight, you know, has faded, rightly so. There's lots of other things that we should be talking about. But our story is a long-term story, but it's also a story of amazing, amazing resilience, of resistance, but also incredible hope that's very much being led by our children.
Mona, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to us about this.
Thank you. Stay safe.
Flint pediatrician Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha. You can find more information about her latest results on our website.